Well, it's Presbyterians Sharing Sunday. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that Presbyterians are more than just the ones you see looking around at the moment, which I suspect is no surprise to any of you. It's a reminder that we are connected with a group of like-minded people in a denomination. And one of the things that a group of people can do is almost always accomplish more than the sum of the parts, in the same way that so many other things are. And one of the things that we can do when we get together with other Presbyterians is accomplish some of the things that you saw on the insert. Presbyterian sharing is all about equipping congregations, ministries, presbyteries, supports biblical and theological reflection and dialogue, just to pick out a couple. And so when you give to this, those are some of the kinds of things that you are supporting. And on the back of that, or the front, I guess, hard to tell which is which, it gives you some idea of where the money goes that you provide, which is important. One of the biggest red flags I have when I'm looking at charities of any sort are the ones that don't tell me how much administration, fundraising, and that kind of thing costs. Because, of course, it costs something. To suggest that you can run a charity with no administration costs is just foolish. And if people don't put it in there, I think, A, they're foolish and I don't want to support them, or B, they're not telling me the truth and I don't want to support them. But what you can see here is that in Presbyterian sharing, about 1% is used for promotion and fundraising. And that's one of the benefits of working within a denomination. We have other ways to communicate. We have other administrative supports that are built in that can assist this to keep administration and that sort of thing, keep those costs as low as possible. So the money that you give goes to good places. And you can see what some of them are. You can see what some of the various initiatives are. But why would you give? It's one of those questions that we should ask ourselves every once in a while. Because, well, if we don't ask ourselves, we'll either be giving unconsciously or just as likely, maybe even more likely, we won't be giving at all. So why do we? Well, there's lots of reasons, and we won't talk about all of them by any means, but the one that I want to highlight that's a bad reason is guilt. Giving out of guilt is just not good for you. It's good for the people you give to, because, you know, guilty money looks about the same and spends about the same as non-guilty money. But the point of giving is not to somehow purchase a clear conscience. It doesn't really work that way. If you're making amends or something, that's another question altogether. But if you're giving just out of guilt, that somebody has somehow made you feel bad about yourself, and you figure the best way to make that feeling go away is to give them some money or to support whatever charity they're talking about, I think you should look for something a little more sustainable, if nothing else. Most of us can't live in guilt, no matter how much we think we can, or sometimes think we have. Guilt is a poor motivator overall. So what's a better one? Well, when we look at Timothy, the letter that Paul wrote to Timothy about what it means to be a pastor and a bunch of other things, we have some very interesting statements in there. And he begins the part that we read, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." And the great gain is part of the overall context where Paul is talking about people who are apparently trying to preach for money. They're trying to sell their spiritual acuity or whatever else it might be. And Paul's saying that in other places, don't do that. There's other ways to get gain. Contentment is one of them. It's great gain. "For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that." Now, some people have taken this passage and suggested that what Paul is saying is that all you need, all you should even want, is food and clothing, essentially the absolute bare minimum for existence. If you have enough food to eat, if you have clothing, and we'll include shelter in there too, I suppose, that's all you should need, that's all you should want, and if you have any more than that, there's something wrong with you. Well, that may be the case, but don't try and make it from here, because that's not what Paul is saying. What Paul is saying is, when we look at what we have from that beginning, that's where we start. If we have those things, we have enough to continue. Because he says the flip side, people who want to get rich fall into temptation in a trap and into many foolish and harmless desires that plunge everyone into ruin and destruction. And then one of the most misquoted verses in all of Scripture, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It's the love of money that's the problem. Money is not a problem. Money is just a thing. It's like saying that a brick is the root of all problems because somebody hit you with one. You can also build things, like buildings out of bricks. Money can be good or bad. The love of money, this deep desire for more, no matter what you already have, that's a problem. That's not money's fault. That comes within us. So what's the answer? How do we respond to that? Well, the trick, if there is one, is in the word contentment. Now, what is contentment? Contentment, first of all, is not settling. Contentment is not a fatalistic view that this is as good as it gets, so I may as well just be happy. Gritting your teeth and being happy doesn't work very well, at least not for most of us. And that's not what contentment is. Contentment is looking to see, do you have enough to do the things that matter? Not do you have all that there is to have. Do you have enough to do the things that matter? If you're looking at what you have from the perspective of what somebody else has, or you're looking at what you have and you're not seeing that, you're seeing what isn't there, you're seeing what's missing, you will be chronically discontented because there's always going to be somebody who has something you don't. Even the richest people in the world have things that they still want. And if that's all you're looking for, you will always be discontented because they'll always be missing. If you're looking at what you don't have, it makes it very difficult to see what you do have. Human beings multitask very poorly. And our eyes aren't built to look at two things at once, really. We can look at a group of things, but we can't look at two discrete things at once, at least not very well. And if we're looking at what we don't have, we're going to be blind to what we do. And if all we fix our vision on is an empty spot, we'll start to think that we're empty when we're not. Contentment begins with looking at the things that you have and being grateful for them. One of the hallmarks of contentment is gratitude, and it's a virtuous circle. They lead into each other. Contentment leads to gratitude, and gratitude leads to contentment. But you won't do that if you're not willing to actually look at what's really there. And I'm not talking about that old notion about eat your vegetables because somebody's starving somewhere, because that doesn't work very well either. Because really, what's the only answer to that? Send your vegetables to them if they're starving. This doesn't solve either problem. So we're not talking about comparing. We're not saying that because we have something and other people have less, it means that we have enough, any more than when we're saying that people who have more than us means that we don't have enough. Enough is a moving target. It changes all the time. Contentment is a bit of work. We have to keep looking at it. But we look at it to see, do I have enough to do what matters? To take care of my responsibilities, to take care of myself. And if that's the case, then what do I do with what's more than that? Because I'll tell you right now, we cannot give if we are chronically discontented with our own lot. If we look at everything we have and go, this really is not enough. It's very difficult to give. If we do, it'll come from those bad reasons like guilt or trying to salve our conscience, which may or may not work. The flip side of this is that we also can't give if we are chronically contented with the lot of others. If you look at the world through whatever lens you use, television, newspapers, social media of one sort or another, if you look at these things and you say, well, they deserve to be poor. They made bad choices, I'm sure, so that's how they should be. You're not going to give then either, are you? Why would you? If you look at other places and say, well, if only they'd looked like me, or if only they believed the things that I believed, then they wouldn't need anything. They'd be taken care of. It's their fault. You're not going to give. There are many people who think this way, and they're wrong. Of course there are people who are in poverty because they made bad choices. There are people who are rich because they made bad choices too. Bad choices are bad choices, but we're not talking about that. To suggest that there aren't systemic issues that create poverty for people who are working as hard as they can, much harder than I've ever worked in my life to escape it, and still can't, to ignore that, to say that simply doesn't exist, is foolish. There are people who, through no fault of their own, need our help. But if we don't believe that, we'll never help. It's a weird kind of contentment, but I've seen it. I find it hard to believe, but I have seen people who suggest that everyone is poor because they deserve to be poor. Because if they didn't deserve to be poor, they wouldn't be poor. It's a peculiar kind of thinking that I won't dignify by calling it reasoning. We can't do that. We have a responsibility to help where we can. And once we have put in the work to see, do we have enough? Can we be content with what we have? And does that leave any excess? And it does for many of us. Then we have that responsibility to do what we can for these others. Whether that's supporting something like Presbyterian Sharing or World Vision or some other national and international scope charity, or whether it's giving to someone that you know needs the help that you can provide, doesn't matter. You are giving out of the abundance that you have, and you will never, ever see abundance in your life until you achieve some level of contentment. Contentment comes and goes, by the way. You don't achieve it once and you never have to work on it again. Oh, if only it were. And many of us find it hard to be content. We live in a culture that tells us if we're content, there's something wrong with us. We live in a culture that's devoted literally billions of dollars to telling us that everything we have is insufficient. It's tough to rise against, but we can. We can be content with what we have, if we have a better idea of what it is that we need to do. We need to live healthy lives, so we need to have food to eat. We need to continue living, so we need shelter. We need community. We need all of those things. We have to take care of ourselves, but do we really need that much more? Only you can answer that. Only you know if you have sufficient resources to give. And if you do, then you should. Does that mean you have to give money? Well, what if you don't have enough? What if you have a listening ear? What if you have a compassionate heart? What if you have the ability to help people in other ways? That's all part of giving. And part of contentment is assessing all that you have, not just your bank account, but your experience and your talents. And it's contented people. It's people who understand that God has said, I want you to do these things, and I've given you the resources to do them, that are able to give. How much that is and what it looks like changes for each of us from one season to the next. And it's different from one person to the next. You won't see anywhere in here some formula that says that everybody should do X amount of whatever they've got. We pursue contentment. Well, it's good for us just to be content. But it's from that foundation of contentment, of knowing that we have been cared for by a God who loves us, that empowers us and enables us to then give to those who need what it is that we have. Pursuing contentment is a countercultural act. You're swimming against the stream of our culture when you say, no, I don't need that. I don't need another car. I don't need a bigger television. I don't need a bigger house than what I need. But it is so rewarding. It frees up the possibility for you to make a profound difference in the lives of others, maybe people you know well, or maybe people you'll never meet this side of glory, because you looked at the world and said, it's wrong that some people don't have access to clean water. I want to do something about that. It's wrong that girls don't have education opportunities in some places of the world, and I want to do something about that. You look at these things, whether they're near or far, and you say, I want to do something about that, and on the basis of what I have, I can. That will increase your contentment, by the way, as it gives you a better idea of what you can do and the value that you provide. On Presbyterian Sharing, we think about giving to others, but it's something that we do all of the time. We support our congregation. We support each other in non-financial ways with a friendly face, with the care that we provide. And all of that comes, one way or another, from our understanding that we can be content because a God who loves us will provide what it is that we need. Amen.